Don't spend another winter with your home colder than it should be. Hi, I'm Roy Spencer with PermaSeal. We measure the amount of heat loss and recommend solutions to keep it comfortable. Call PermaSeal for your free estimate, 800-421-SEAL, or visit permaseal.net.
A guest who has just entered the studio was gifted with a CC Wi-Fi 3 radio for his Christmas present. Hi, Patrick.
Woohoo!
Hey, Dr. Patrick Crispin. I think you told us, as we talked about Bose.
That's right.
A couple of months ago.
If you have the Bose SoundTouch, they're going to stop working come the couple months from now,
right,
where the system is no longer going to allow you to stream internet radio on it.
That's
and
so odd,
it's like,
too.
Okay,
it was
what
not
do I
an
do?
Inexpensive radio that you bought.
I spent a lot of money on that
thing.
So
we're replacing it with the Seacrane Wi-Fi radio, so you can have that in your office.
Thank you for that.
And, Patrick is part of the posse that came in with our grandson, Joseph.
Joseph is in the
Joseph
house.
Joseph is in the house.
Hi.
Hi. So it's great to have you back in here. You look taller. I even raised my chair so that I could see you well, but I don't think I need that because I can see you so clearly. How tall are you now? Do you know? Are you Are you like 7 foot tall?
About 4'9".
4'9". Okay. I just measure you by standing under my chin, and now you can't stand under my chin. You're past my chin.
He's about 6 inches shorter than me.
6 inches shorter than Mama at 9 years old. Okay.
By the way, we were talking earlier about the weather and how the weather is about to change. For those of you that are wondering, why are we going to get snow? The power Joseph has is amazing. You came to Chicago and you said you wanted what?
I did the snow dance.
You did the snow dance. And then your parents begged you to stop doing the snow dance, right?
I said, nuh-uh.
I'm doing it again. So it went from an inch of snow to maybe snow Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday.
Are you kidding
me? I'm not kidding
no.
you.
Your son has amazing powers, Christine.
Well, we asked him to do the lottery dance today.
Yeah, but to everybody who's listening, if it does snow, I apologize. I really do.
No!
But my son very much wants
it. It's a holiday week.
Okay,
but also, did you notice it is going to snow Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and stop snowing
the day
you're heading back out.
Of course.
Your powers are amazing, Joseph.
That's great. But again, it's a holiday week. Traffic will be light. People will be home. I'm putting a positive spin on this because I'm tickled. When he got out of the car on Christmas Day, we had a small pile of dirty snow in front of the house. And before he even came in, I saw him out in the yard, right, Joseph? You were just touching it to see if it was real. Just an icky little pile of snow. And he comes in and he goes, there's snow out there.
By the way, Joseph, we've been getting some messages. I don't know if you saw these on our Facebook page, honey, with people saying, okay, has Joseph got any new airplanes or is he any new airplane sightings?
Did you get any new airplanes since we saw you and you got a Concorde? No? You have to talk when you're on the radio.
No.
Thank you.
Yeah, because we can't hear your head rattling.
Is there any new airplanes that you want?
I don't know.
Oh,
we're
going
to go
shy
to the airplane store.
Yes.
One of the days that it's open, he's forced us to go there.
That's a cute little store, on Devon.
Grayland Station, I think it's called.
Yeah.
It's up around, isn't that
it's
around?
It's by Forest Preserve Drive, Sauganash.
Yeah, that whole Sauganash
that
Northwest
neck of the woods.
And it's a tiny store wall to wall model airplanes. And when we think models, you think like plastic. No, these are like die cast, like super realistic models. And it is Joseph's happy place. He demands to go there.
And they have tail numbers on the models, so you can actually look up the tail number to see the actual plane.
Oh. And the dude that runs the place, he knows where everything is.
He knows where
even
everything
is. Even though it's stacked.
I have no idea how he knows it.
So chaotic.
It's not your happy place, no. I can see.
It's Joseph's happy place. And again, he's loved airplanes all along. In fact, this past weekend, we were in Victorville. And there is a airplane boneyard out there where they park all the old airplanes.
Oh, fun.
Because it's up in the high desert. It never mm-hmm. rains up there. And you got to see some old FedEx planes and
the
an old Southwest and DC-10s. And
is it like an airplane Stonehenge or what?
No, it's basically, it's sort of like it used to be a military base and now just parked out in the fields row upon row of decommissioned airplanes.
Oh, we got to go there next time we're out
or
there.
Or new airplanes waiting
Or new airplanes that just landed but are going through checkout. So it's at the Southern California Logistics Airport is what it's called. It's in Victorville. So there are brand new airplanes that have just landed, like straight out of the Airbus factory. They come to Victorville, and then they go through the checkout flights before they're put into service.
And for those of you that are saying, oh, Victorville, that sounds familiar. Yeah, Roy Rogers used to live in Victorville, and that's where his whole, he used to, when he was there, he had a whole museum.
It's still there, I think.
Is it still there?
I think so.
Wow.
Well, we want to go to Victorville.
Up in the high desert.
Yeah. That's where my brother lives.
Well, Patrick, you said it doesn't rain there. Christine, didn't you send me a video of the rain swirling on his patio the other day?
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't normally rain.
Doesn't normally rain.
So it was a freakish thing, really.
It was bad.
Wow. I think your description of weather was heinous. It was.
I mean, all day on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
We got flash flood warnings and tornado warnings.
Well, we got 5 to 10 inches in Los Angeles in one day.
Actually, 10.88. I saw on a news thing today. 10.88 as of Friday.
And now you've got the song going through my head.
It never rains in Southern California.
It very rarely does, but when it does, it's basically God flushing the toilet and just saying, I'm getting all the water out of here. Here you go.
But it's especially difficult for some areas
because of the burn areas,
the rain is going to flow straight down.
Last January, out in close to the Pacific Ocean, and then
our neighborhood in sort of the
Eaton Fire, serious major damage, and the mountains have nothing on it. So anytime it rains,
it's going to flow. Yep. Yeah. I love the text from the listeners that say, Steve, you played it a million times.
I know
because I was listening to you.
Now you can stop texting us. We know. That's the song. We got
that's it. Albert Hammond. That's thank you all.
Well, and I played it at multiple radio stations because the first time I played that was I was in Indianapolis.
Yes.
Then when I segued to Chicago at one radio station and then
another radio station. You went from FM to AM. Well, it came up in conversation for those of you just joining us because we have our California kids in the house. Dr. Patrick Crispin is here for his tech segment. He does twice a month. And we decided we wouldn't keep him out
too late.
Yes.
But Patrick, before we get to all kinds of tech things, could we spend a second or two and talk about something that you stumbled on and you went early Saturday morning to act on what you stumbled on? This is so cool.
This is a new app, right?
This has been around for a while, but not everybody.
But new to Chicago.
New to Chicago, or at least not everybody knows about it. And it's an app called Too Good To Go.
T-double-O.
Yeah, T-O-O, good, G-O-O-D, T-O-G-O. And what you do is you go into this app and you purchase a surprise bag from major grocery stores or restaurants or bakeries and things like that. And it's the things that at the end of the day, they would like possibly want to throw away.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it's bad. It's just, okay, it's at the end of the day.
You got too much bread.
Day old bread, day old donuts mm-hmm. or something like that. So you get a surprise bag and they sell it at one third of whatever the price would be. So just for grins, and I've been using this in Los Angeles, I wanted to check it out here and open it up, and it found out that the Misericordia Hearts and Flower Bakery Cafe had this basically a surprise bag, and for $5, you can get $15 worth of pastries.
And you did that
today. So I decided, okay, let's go check it out, and this was what was in my bag. Again, this is $5. 2 maple Long Johns, 1 chocolate Long John, an Irish scone, a glazed maple scone, I think, and a candy ginger muffin. So about $15, $20 worth of pastries for $5. $5. So what's the
catch? Wait, now, did they taste fresh?
Very much. Yeah,
I mean,
the donuts were, you know, maybe a day old, if that, but not. I mean, you couldn't.
Yeah, they were good Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah, they were good.
Because,
exactly.
You got
That's
your coffee.
That's what they tasted like.
Yeah.
But everything was fresh. I'm actually opened up the app here and seen what's available in the popular things here in downtown. Paris Baguette, Whole Foods had a seafood bag where for $10 you can get $30 worth of seafood.
Wow.
Or a meat bag for $10 where you can get, or for $10 you get $30. Groceries, I'm looking at Bombay Eats.
Really?
It's just...
So you put the app on your phone.
Just open up the app. Too good to go. And then
is this kind of like a the gluten-free app you had, where it will tell you what stores in your area are doing this? And when Patrick told me...
What's available today, now, or what's going to be available in the future. So, yeah, it's you can't guarantee that there's going to be something there tomorrow, and you can't guarantee what's going to be in the bag, but... If you're willing to get
But when Patrick told me that Misericordia was one of the places, mm-hmm. I said, absolutely, let's check this out. Because we've been fans of Misericordia for years. Well, we used to live just blocks away from Misericordia, and it's a wonderful organization.
So what do you have to say, I'm going to buy this, lock it in?
Yeah, so,
because if 15 people want that one surprise bag, you get to the place and...
The merchants who are participating say, okay, here are the number of bags that I'm willing to sell today. And people can then sign up and say, okay, I want that bag. You prepay for it using your phone, and then you go and pick it up, and you kind of swipe something saying, I'm here to pick it up, and they bring the bag out to you. And we've used it in Los Angeles. This right now is in about 30 major cities in North America. The idea is to be in every major city in America that has over a million people.
Mm-hmm.
So Chicago, Milwaukee, Indianapolis, LA, New York, you name the big cities, it's mm-hmm. already there right now.
So for people who say, but that means that food is not going to homeless. That food doesn't go to homeless people.
We had this debate, and it's like the reality is it doesn't go to homeless people because somewhere down the line, some lawyer decided I'm going to sue for food that you donate. And you can't sue for food that you're selling, and it's the good stuff. It's actually stuff they're taking off their shelves, which they're selling right now. They're just selling it to you for a third of the price.
The first time we became aware of this was when we were in Las Vegas. Oddly enough, for Patrick and Christine's wedding, and we were at a wonderful restaurant.
We were at Maggiano's, and they give you so much food. We said, we'll take it and give it to folks on the street.
And we were told, no, you can't do that. It was actually a crime to give it mm-hmm. to anyone on the street.
Yeah. Yeah. So Too Good to Go. T-double-O. Too Good to Go. And then you can... put in your neighborhood.
You just basically choose the map and say, okay, show me what's available here around me today or what's going to be showing up tomorrow. It's hit or miss. You know, there was a bakery down the street from us, a world famous bakery, Tartine, that used to do it every day, and then they kind of stopped. But you know, here in Chicago, this is like really big. Again, you have to be in the big city to see this. It's one of the 30 big cities in America.
But also, if you're listening to us someplace outside of Chicago, you might want to check to see if your city is one of the cities that offers this.
Or if you ever go to Chicago or any other major city, open up the app if you're interested in saying, you know, hey, I want
a bag of Long Johns.
Does Stan's Donuts have any extra donuts that they're giving away?
Yeah. I love this idea.
It's a great idea.
Do you know anything about the people who developed it?
I know that it was started in Denmark back in 2020.
Really?
And then it has expanded all over Europe and then came to the United States right before the pandemic.
It's the same company that started it in Denmark?
Yes,
are they involved with the...
Exactly.
Wow.
Really? Okay.
Yep. Wow. I'm so impressed. So Too Good to Go.
Too good to go.
Now that we got your attention. And again, if you are on the north side, support Misericordia. That's a great way for you to stop by there and get to know
them. Wonderful organization.
Yeah, and they've got a sweet restaurant and mm-hmm. bakery and a lot of people that make that place a success. And we want it to continue to be just that. So Too Good to Go is a great way to try out what they offer. There's something going on in our world that is important to you if you're on the fence about purchasing that computer you know you need, you know you're eventually going to buy, but you're putting it off. So why should we not be putting it off, Patrick?
Yeah, and if you're involved in technology, what I'm about to say is going to make you go, duh, I know this already. But if you don't live technology, this is going to come as a really, really big surprise.
Yeah.
AI, we all know it's big, and AI data center demand is now consuming everything when it comes to advanced chips. We're talking about memory, storage, networking, silicon, and GPUs. And even with the chip fabrication plants sort of ramping up, demand is growing faster than the fabrication plants can create the chips. So during the pandemic, we had a chip shortage. We're back to having a chip shortage because AI is eating up all the available chips.
Wow.
Gets worse. Micron, and if you don't know about Micron, Micron is one of the major storage and memory manufacturers.
Been around a long time.
Been around forever. They make the Crucial brand, which is a world-famous brand. I mean, if you're a hobbyist, you know about Crucial. Micron just announced they're shutting down their entire consumer line. They're not going to sell consumer goods anymore, for the simple reason that they're going to be shifting their manufacturing capacity to AI customers. And you really can't blame them for this.
That's where the money is.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that Micron hates customers and say, oh, we're going to hurt you because you like Crucial. It's like, no, we're going to get rid of this because I can make more money for my shareholders by selling to data centers because the data centers have a lot more money right now. So that's bad. We got Micron, one of the major manufacturers, getting out of the business. It gets even worse. NVIDIA, which is a major graphics card manufacturer, just announced they're going to cut gaming GPU production by 30 to 40% in 2026.
That's huge.
And it's a big amount. Again, they're going to take their focus for AI data centers. So what ends up happening is this is not a small adjustment. This is basically the hardware manufacturer becoming less enamored for consumers, saying we want to serve the consumer market. We need to serve our shareholders and make more money. So what does that mean for you and me? It means that when supply tightens, and it's going to tighten, and one or two of the largest competitors in the workplace just say, nope, we're out of there, prices always, always go up, and they already have. They've gone up tremendously. RAM prices have tripled in the last couple weeks.
Whoa.
So a RAM chip
in the last couple of weeks?
Last couple of weeks. So a RAM stick that you could have bought in September for $250 is now $750 to $1,000.
Good grief.
What?
And
so again, this is for those of you who know you need a new computer, but you think you're going to put it off till after you get your tax return.
Don't wait. I mean, and what's going to happen is now the mainstream manufacturers are going to say, okay, we've recommended for a long time you get 16 gigs of RAM in your laptop. You really should get 8. We can't afford to send you 16 anymore right now. Get 8. So expect to see mainstream manufacturers, you know, kind of downgrading the equipment that they're selling.
So then you have to pay.
So expensive.
Then you, the consumer, have to pay extra to upgrade.
Yep. Pretty much anything that is going to require a chip, and I'm talking about laptops, desktops, consoles, phones, tablets, anything that uses memory or flash memory, they're going to get noticeably more expensive. They already have, and they're going to get even worse. So if you've been delaying buying a computer or some sort of tech upgrade, don't delay. Stop delaying. Go to the store now. The price today now is going to be the cheapest you'll get for the next year or so.
Mm-hmm.
This is the time to get. And I fully expect some new technology that's coming out that they're going to announce at CES or when the Steam machine actually launches. You're going to see a $50 to $100 bump on those things just because of the cost of the individual chips. And it's because AI.
Okay, but I'm going to take you in a little different direction for a second. Do you think, and we're overdue to have a conversation with you and Tom Appel, computer chips,
yep,
cars,
yep,
trucks, computer, how is that going to impact, or
I think
it absolutely will have an impact on the automotive industry.
I think it'll have an impact on the automotive industry. I think the automotive industry can bear some of the costs because mm-hmm. they're not squeezed. The profit margin on a laptop is like 1-3%.
Oh.
They're really, really thin in what they can do. So if their prices for the parts go up, then it gets really, really hard for them and they have to pass it on. If the price for your Chevy goes, you know, the individual parts in the Chevy goes up, they can hide a little of that mm-hmm. or eat some of those. So I do think it's going to impact the price of cars, not as significantly as it is going to be on your home technologies and your laptops and your game consoles.
I'm glad you just said laptops, because the yep. listener said if you don't really need a computer, just get a pad. But they're going to be affected too.
Apple is fortunate in that they have working relationships with Taiwan Semiconductor, TSMC, who manufacture their chips. But even some of them, their prices are going to go up. So
tablets.
Anything that has a chip in it.
A phone, as you said at the yeah. outset. And they're already pushing $2,000 for mm-hmm. a phone. So that is insane. Gosh, I just checked the NVIDIA stock because that's been a fun stock to watch over the past year. And I was thinking,
has it had ups and downs in 25?
Yeah, boy, you could get whiplash with NVIDIA. I looked at the graph. I was like, whoa.
What's going on with them?
Yeah. So, again, if you're on the fence.
Now is the time to buy.
We're not in the market. We don't have a company. We're just telling you, don't put it off. Okay, before we take a break, real quick, George wants to know, in your opinion, what is the best Wi-Fi router for the home?
Honestly, the TP-Link Archer BE3600. It's a really good one, great price. I think it's like $87. It's got four antennas, actually five antennas, or six. I'm trying to picture it in my head. and it's fantastic. It will cover most of your house unless you have a really big house or, you know, you have metal lath and plaster walls. Mm-hmm. And the thing I need to point out is that TP-Link is a Chinese company, and a story we might be talking about later on with the DJI and how drones are now not going to be allowed to be made and manufactured in China. TP-Link might be the next company where the United States government could say, it's a Chinese company and we're concerned about you having access to the internet mm-hmm. and all the home users. We might prohibit this from being sold. Hasn't happened yet.
Yes.
But if you're interested then in that case, then and avoiding Chinese companies, there's the Eero, E-E-R-O 6. The issue with that is it's owned by Amazon. So you either have China have all your data or Amazon have all your data. And I'm not sure there's a win on this one.
So the other one is TP as in Paul?
Yeah, TP-Link.
TP-Link. Okay.
And it's the Archer BE3600.
And it's Eero, E-E-R-O.
E-E-R-O 6.
The number 6.
Yep.
Okay. That's a good question. But how interesting, though, that you have to consider the fact that
Something could happen.
From China.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had talked about this before. I'm not in the camp that says, I want the router that will allow me to sit in my yard, sit in my car,
right.
and do a... I want the kind of router that says, okay, you're covering the house. I don't care about the Joneses down the street being able to access free Wi-Fi from me. I would rather that didn't happen.
And that's where you go into the super duper premium brands. We've got you a Ubiquiti mm-hmm. Dream Router at home,
which is
meant for small businesses. It's not meant for home users, but you know, when we show up, we bring a small business with our technology. The number of devices on his network
because
is hysterical.
When you show up, especially during a month other than the holidays, you're actually working. You and Christine are working. So it's really taxing the system.
Joseph is sitting next to me playing Roblox.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And then we're doing our thing at the same time, and we're all going, ah. So we finally bit the bullet.
But since we got the Ubiquiti, we don't notice any
change. Absolutely not. Well, Dr. Patrick Crispin is in the house with us, and we are talking tech as we do twice a month. And I was looking back. We're coming up on our third anniversary here.
Yeah. In fact, our show next week, we will be kind of celebrating our third anniversary.
Yes, back on Saturday nights. And Patrick's been with us this whole time. And every year we say, so look in your crystal ball. What do you see coming up in the new year? So what do you see?
I came up with five this year that are pretty much no-brainer. So I wish I could say these were like, oh, wow, I'm taking a risk. None of these are really a risk. Grand Theft Auto 6, if that game does ship this year, and it's scheduled right now for November 19th, 2026.
Oh, just in time for Christmas 2026.
Just in time for Christmas 2026. I absolutely predict not only is it going to be a cultural landmark, it's going to be talked about by everybody.
Why?
This isn't a gaming prediction. I'm really talking about this is a media and infrastructure prediction because so many people are going to be playing this game and so many people are going to be downloading this game, which is going to be gigabytes after gigabytes. I think you're going to see network connections around the world get hammered by this. And I also think that if it does ship on November 19th, I think for about a week or two, when you call tech support, nobody's going to be there because they're going to be at home playing Grand Theft Auto 6. I saw that this was expected to make something like $7 billion. That's how big this is going to be. Think the biggest movie you can think of, this is 10 times that, the number of people who are going to be paying for this. It's going to be absolutely huge. So Grand Theft Auto 6 is going to be huge.
Question. How much is their price going to be impacted by what you were just talking about?
It won't impact the price of the game because the game is physical media or digital media. Okay. But the devices you play it on are going to become more expensive.
Yes.
So
okay.
when the Steam Machine comes out, we were thinking that the price of the Steam Machine was going to be about $700. I think it's going to be $750 just because of the price of RAM. They're going to add $50. I fully expect GTA 6. There is going to be a lot of what about the children campaigns. Oh, this is terrible. Mm-hmm. We need to ban this game. I think the media isn't going to know how to cover this at all. And they're going to think that gamers are weird or whatever. But everybody's playing video games nowadays.
Billions of dollars. Can we buy stock in that company?
It's Take-Two is the name of the company. And I'm not sure if it's publicly traded. That's a good question.
Let's look into that, Steve.
Okay.
I think that...
Second prediction. Apple is going to make a foldable iPhone.
Really?
I don't know if it's going to happen and ship this year, but I think it's going to be announced.
Yes,
I know you have one in your hand right now.
You have the flip.
So if you have a... Basically, it's going to be a book-style phone, kind of like the Samsung Galaxy Z Fold 7, Google Pixel 10 Fold Pro. And it's going to be sort of a open it up like a book rather than the clamshell design of the Samsung Galaxy Z Flip. The big difference here is that Apple, what we're hearing is, found a way to do this. So when you open it up, you don't see the crease at all. All in any direction. You can lay it down, lay it flat, left, right, up, down. It's creaseless, which is, I don't know how they're doing it. Mm-hmm. Liquid metal and some sort of magic.
I'm going to hold you on this for a second because I've been fascinated watching the development of flip-ish phones because I'm just holding up.
And I can see the seam in the middle.
A little, but what I find fascinating. When I first got one of these, it took about 2 months, and all of a sudden you could see a crack.
Yep.
But then Samsung was able to tweak that, so you no longer. I've had this for going on a year, and it is seamless.
Knock on wood.
but you still can see just a smidge of here's where the fold is. So this is fascinating.
Apple is finally catching up with everybody else. Be prepared right now. The price of this is going to be vomit in a corner expensive.
Yeah. Like $2,000.
About $2,000.
Yeah.
And people are going to say, this is ridiculous. But, you know, the reality is the foldable phone market's like 2.5% of the entire iPhone, or the phone market. Not a lot of people buy foldable phones. So this is going to be a small product. I think it's a neat little thing, but it's just a niche product. But Apple is releasing a foldable phone.
Mm-hmm.
Third thing, we've talked in the past about the Meta AI glasses
yes.
that they have.
Right.
And they've kind of owned this space by themselves. I fully expect this is the year that Apple, Google, and Samsung are going to get into the AI market mm-hmm. or the AR glasses market. I'm not sure if Apple's glasses ship this year. These are codenamed the N50 glasses, but I think they'll be announced this year.
And let's take a moment to explain that these are not glasses for gaming or for just grins.
These are glasses you wear all the time.
And if you have low vision.
Or regular vision, it has an overlay and you can see things where it's translations or street maps or...
Amazing.
So those things are coming. Meta has owned that space now for the past couple of years, but everybody's coming into the space in the mm-hmm. next year. I'm going to predict... And this one I'm probably going to get wrong on both. I think that OpenAI and SpaceX have an IPO this year, and I think they're going to be blockbusters. OpenAI, I think, is valued at about $830 billion, so their IPO is going to be huge. And SpaceX is $1.5 trillion.
Ooh.
So these are going to be two giant IPOs. The rumor is they're going to happen this year, so just brace yourself. The last thing I want to predict is one of the topics you're going to hear in the next couple of weeks from CES is a brand new TV display technology. Not really new. It's been out for a couple months now, called micro RGB, or actually more accurate, RGB mini LED. Micro RGB is the TV industry's next attempt to get OLED type color, which is fantastic, mm-hmm. brilliant color, and mini LED brightness, put it together in the same device mm-hmm. and sell it. So we're going to do red, green, and blue LEDs directly in the backlight, and you're going to get really bright pictures, colors that approach, not exactly, but really come close to OLED screens, and it's... not going to have to worry about the burn-in that you get with the OLED screen. It's going to be significantly brighter than the OLED screens out there.
It's hard to believe because my experience is sometimes I'm like, this is just too bright for me.
It'll be so bright.
Wow.
And you can turn these things down. The only trade-off is, one, the price is going to be pretty expensive for now, first generation. But the other thing is that we are expecting this to not be able to do blacks as perfectly as an OLED screen. OLEDs, mm-hmm. when there's nothing being transmitted, yeah. that's black.
Yep. Yeah.
If you have red, green, and blue in the back, there might be a little bit of light coming through. Just be aware, you're going to hear this called, I think LG is going to call this micro RGB Evo. Samsung is micro RGB. Hisense is the only one who got the name right, which is the RGB mini LED, which is what it is. And Sony, being Sony, is calling it true RGB, which is
not, of course.
Yeah, of course. But just be aware, I think everybody's going to be talking about at CES new displays. I'm not sure we're going to get it this year for you and me and everybody else, but if this does work, this could be the new platform that we all go to that might be the next OLED killer.
Hmm. And stick around for a year. Those prices will come down.
Exactly.
Because that's the way it always happens.
This Week in Hacks, Patrick, what do we have?
We talked about this back in March, but this campaign is getting so bad, I need to bring it back up again because this really is This Week in Hacks. And it's really kind of to the point where the bad guys are now making tutorial videos that talk you through step by step how to hurt your computer.
Whoa.
And it's...
why would you want to do this?
But it looks so real and legit.
So real.
And
so here's what's going on. The bad guys are breaking into the admin panels of legitimate commercial websites. So it's not, they're not hacking you yet. What they're doing is they're hacking the .coms out there that you visit every day. And once inside, they're adding malicious JavaScript that replaces the site's normal page with a fake warning saying your browser is broken and a fake CAPTCHA prompt, which is that prompt that asks you to prove that you're human and do this. So once you land on one of these websites that has been compromised, what you end up getting is instructions telling you to open up system tools on your device. So it could be Windows R, or on the Mac Open Spotlight, type in terminal. And then they give you these things and say, okay, now paste this into that. And what that's happening is when you follow those steps that are showing up, your browser is broken, you need to go and do this to prove that you're human. What it does is it runs malware on your computer outside of your web browser through your system. And you're never going to see a warning. You're never going to see that you're downloading things in the background. And this has been used to impersonate Google Chrome, Facebook, PDF Simply, ReCAPTCHA. And it's part of something called ClickFix. So it's been going around for a long time. And if you get infected by this, in other words, if you infect yourself, and there are a lot of websites now that are saying, okay, here's what you need to do, and watch this video, and we'll show you how to go and press the Windows key and the R key, or go into Terminal in Apple and paste this command. And it's really telling you how to hurt your computer.
And this can happen on your phone, too, of course.
No, it's Windows. It's really just Windows Windows and Mac OS. So it's not something that can happen on your phone. At least it hasn't happened on the iOS at all. And I haven't seen it happen on Android. This is really just showing you how to go into the system tools.
To break your own computer.
To break your own computer. What happens when you go and do that? It's usually password stealing malware that gets installed in the background that you don't know. And it's in targeting your browser data, your saved logins, your crypto wallets, and any of your authentication cookies. So the bad guys.
So when you input your passwords, it's going to know.
It's watching you do that because you've infected your computer. So this is really, really big. So things to keep in mind as you're scared about this. A real CAPTCHA, that little thing saying, tell me that you're a human being, is never, ever, ever going to tell you, press the Windows key and R, which is run, or never go into the Apple menu and or go into, and get in a terminal. Never, ever going to do that. If you see that, it's always fake. So a real CAPTCHA never, ever tells you to open a Windows Run box or Mac
terminal.
So
to simplify it, it's never a multi-step procedure.
Never, 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 never.
Let me hold you on this for a second. Because it can be confusing. How many times have you gone to a site and they have the CAPTCHA and you have to put that in, but then you have to put it in again?
That
and sometimes you have to put it in again.
And that's fine. But it's not asking you to do anything on your computer where you're opening up the Windows key or terminal. If a website, you open a website and it says, your browser is broken or your computer is broken.
Run.
Close your browser, get away from that website. It's not real. It's not a real message. Mm-hmm. It's a message from the bad guys, and they're going to try to get you to install something on your computer to give them all your passwords. So if you ever see something saying, your browser is broken, it's not broken. It's never been broken. You just need to sit there and say, oh, these guys got hacked. I got to go someplace else.
Mm-hmm. Ooh. That is really scary because immediately I wanted to clarify on phones because I could just see me putting, as I was doing Christmas shopping, you know, the CAPTCHA. And I'm doing it left and right for all these .com
sites. CAPTCHAs are fine. It's the
multi-steps.
It's the multi-step where it says, I want you to, okay, prove to me you're a human. Open up the Windows Run box, Windows key and R, and then paste this command in that Run box, which is telling the computer in the background, go to this bad guy's website and download and install bad
software. Okay, Patrick, I envision somebody in the audience right now going, what? I did that just yesterday. What happens if, in fact, you think you did that?
You need to
burn your computer.
Well, besides that, and getting a new computer, unfortunately, is now going to be much more expensive. There are ways for you to go through and check it. When we come back in a couple of weeks, I'll talk about how to remove viruses from your computer. There was a tool that Kaspersky gave out that was amazing for removing viruses from your computer. Unfortunately, Kaspersky is a Russian company, and we don't like Russia anymore. So you can't download it.
Because we
America
used to use
anymore.
Kaspersky.
I loved Kaspersky, and their Kaspersky
for years.
Removal tool
remember,
was amazing.
I had a problem with Kaspersky because it was something in the middle of the night, and we couldn't get to anybody.
That's
for,
right.
And I said,
yeah.
Okay, sorry.
That's it. No. Yes.
Yeah, so but there are four separate tools that you can go through that will tell you one, are you infected? And then two, to help you remove some of the things. And they're kind of important you follow in certain steps, but it's something we'll talk
about. Let's definitely do that. And there's another topic we were going to touch on tonight. And let's definitely pick up on pass keys, because yes, we're hearing more and more about everybody wants you to have and use pass keys. And a lot of folks are going, well, I have passwords. Why do I need pass keys? It's easier.
It's easier and much more secure.
Much more secure. But one thought that we'll leave with you until 2 weeks from now, if you decide to go with passkeys, you're going to do some research and go with it, you need to have that on multiple devices.
In case you lose
that phone, you're going to lose your passkey.
Yep, that's it.
So I thought that was fascinating. Be sure you have it on multiple devices just in case. Yes.
For those of you who have been listening and thinking, I'm not going to remember all this, don't worry. Patrick's show notes will magically appear on our blog.
Yes. The college professor and me just writes everything.
It's a PowerPoint. Yeah, every time.
And you can, you'll be able to find it on our blog. Just go to steveandjohnny.wordpress.com.
Real quick, is there a way to make CAPTCHA bigger?
You would use the Zoom tool in your browser. So,
okay, because the listener said, help me. It's so small, I can't see the CAPTCHA square. So use your Zoom tool for that. See, he's a wealth of information. Thank you, as always.
Happy to do it.
Joseph, and thank you for bringing your posse in.
Thanks a bunch. We'll see you in a little bit. Okay?
Okay.
Say goodnight to your fans.
Goodnight, everybody.
Satan is the name she goes by. There's a lot of devil in her eye. Kiss a fire that burns you well. She breaks your heart and it hurts like words can't tell.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. That was a part of my past, my pre-radio past. That was back in the, I want to say that was roughly 1962. Mm-hmm. And during those years, I was very, very fortunate to be a part of a very creative rock and roll community.
In Chicago.
And to my surprise, thanks to our buddy Bill Dahl, this rock and roll period from roughly 1959 to 1963 is now being celebrated in a wonderful new CD called Chicago Rocks, Windy City Rock and Roll, Volume 1.
And it's put out by the Bear Family, which is a wonderful record label. Bill is with us in the studio tonight. Bill Dahl, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's so great to talk to you. And I have to chuckle because when I read your bio, you started as a journalist in 77. And that's when we left Columbia College.
Exactly,
right?
Yes.
We were classmates at Columbia College.
Sure were.
At the radio station. And gosh, I think, do the math, you're coming up on 50 years as a music journalist.
Yes, it doesn't seem like that long, but here we
are. I know.
Yes.
It really doesn't.
And we should mention that over those 50 years, Bill has done some wonderful books and liner notes for albums, and he is a Grammy-nominated writer.
For your Ray Charles box set, right?
Right, a long time ago. Thank you for remembering. It's almost as far back.
Have you done a count of how many records that you've done liner notes for?
I would say close to 1,000 if I had to guess. I never counted them. You know, I know it goes about 18 single space pages.
If you had told me 200, I would have been stunned.
Well, I was doing about 60 a year back when the major labels were still doing a lot of CD reissues. It's cut back some since then because they quit doing CDs altogether pretty much.
Wow.
And that really impacted the bankroll as well as the number. But I'm still doing it for Bear Family and a number of other labels.
Now, when you're doing liner notes, it was different when we had vinyl. Actually, I kind of like what we get in the CD because, like in this latest project of yours, we got a fat booklet.
Exactly. This is what, about a 45-page booklet?
Yeah, I mean, it was I went a little too high, actually. I sent them 30 pages, you know, on the computer, and they were a little, and that's a little too much, but I couldn't help it because there was so, there was a lot of first-person work in there. A lot of times when you're doing liner notes, you're just rehashing what other people have found.
True.
This was about 80% of it, me interviewing people, a lot of whom had never been interviewed before to begin
really?
With, and then putting it all together and trying to figure it all out, and then factoring in that I grew up around, you know, when I was 4 or 5, my mom was a waitress at a joint called the Cairo Supper Club at Sheridan and Irving Park, and therefore I saw Bill Scully and the Dinatones and Tony Smith and the Aristocrats when I was like 5. And so it's weird all these years later. So I can kind of bring that little bit into it too.
Yeah.
So and then I interviewed gentlemen like Mr. King here and Jim Holvey.
And Ronnie Rice.
Mm-hmm. Right. And got a lot of first person from them. Mm-hmm. So I was tying that all together and coming up with all kinds of things that people didn't really put together. And then I've got a friend, a very good friend named Felix Warstein, who loves to go to the library and make copies for me of all these weird articles from local papers. Just by the time we do volume 2, I've got a lot more information now than I did then about certain bands like the Mark IV. You'll notice my bio is kind of slim. It won't be next time. He found some stuff like, holy cow. Did you know they were from Senn High School? How about that?
Really?
Mm-hmm. Didn't know that for
my
volume 1.
My alma mater.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, now, Steve, in your case, you lived this, and you learned stuff from the booklet. There were some facts and some minutiae.
And a couple things. One, I have always loved, and I'm not just saying this because you're in the studio with us, Bill, I've always loved reading your liner notes and your books because not only are we getting information, but your passion for the subject comes through.
Thank you.
You live and breathe this stuff, and it really it makes a difference. But this was this particular CD. I love looking at it and reading the liner notes. And one of the many things that knocked me out: A, I was surprised to see that you were nice enough to include me on it. But B, how many of the people on this CD, and there are 35 cuts on this CD, I shared stages with a ton of these people at places like Popple's Tropicana in Riverdale. I mean, that was really, it was for people too young to remember. In the 50s and into the 60s, Popple's Tropicana, 14444 South Indiana Avenue in Riverdale, it was the teen nightclub in the south suburbs. How big a deal was it? Well, along with the local groups, people like Roy Orbison played there.
Really? Wow.
In fact, one night I will never forget, because they held auditions on different nights of the week. I was there for one of the auditions, and this group came out, and this guy had a southern accent, and his group was called the Red Tops. And it was like something out of a B-movie where at the end of the night, people were following him around the club. It was Doug Somm.
Oh, wow.
And this is before he became Doug Somm and the Mendocino and She's About a Mover and stuff like that, before he became the Sir Douglas Quintet. But it was my point is it was a really cool club, and so many of the groups that are on this CD performed in that venue.
Tobin Matthews, I know.
Yep.
He kind of got his start there.
Yeah. Tobin Matthews, his real name, as you know, Willie Henson.
Right.
Which is, to me, that's the showbiz name right there, Willie Henson.
Yeah, yeah.
But he went with Tobin Matthews.
But Tobin's a good example. Tell a little bit about Tobin and his history, because Tobin Matthews' first record wasn't Tobin Matthews, because there was no Tobin Matthews.
That was how I started the little thing. I said that he had a hit before he existed, which was true. USA Records boss Paul Glass wanted to put this instrumental cover of a song called Ruby Dooby Doo out, and he wanted to put it out under the name of his son, his little baby son named Tobin Matthew Glass. And he said, listen, if you'll be this guy, I'll put some records out by you after this. So he said, okay, fine. So, but he changed it to two T's, Matthews with two T's on the, instead of one T. So that was the only difference between the two. But then he started making records of his own for USA. We have one on there called Think It Over. It's a Buddy Holly cover.
Yeah.
that he literally learned in the washroom of Chess Studios. The vocal group guy there that day said, hey, have you ever heard this song called Think It Over? And he goes, no. He said, well, let's go and I'll teach it to you. And they recorded it that day. Shows how he came in with less than 100%, you know,
yeah.
repertoire to record that way.
But you wouldn't know that he, in fact, after we break, we'll come back with that song.
Right.
You wouldn't know that he came back with less than 100% because it's a great record.
Yeah, and, it really is.
And at that time, again, at Popple's Tropicana, it was Jimmy and the Jeepers with Willie Henson as their lead vocalist. Willie became Tobin Matthews, and just a great live group.
And what's more, Tobin didn't have to speed it up a half step like Holly did.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. We're talking about this new CD called Chicago Rocks Windy City Rock and Roll Volume 1. It is available on Amazon, but we did a little research. So price-wise, your most expensive is Amazon.
Yeah.
And then next is the Bear Family, the label. Oh, yeah. But I would imagine those come from Germany, don't they?
Right.
So that would be a delayed. And so I'm just going to suggest we had great luck with oldies.com. Yeah. That was the least expensive. It's still a good price. Not trying to take money out of your pocket.
I don't get any either way from that, but I was looking just now at eBay, and somebody had it up there for $33.89.
Really? And that's why Amazon is saying, no, you can't buy more than four, because people are grabbing them, taking them over to eBay. And I suspect a lot of them would sell in European markets.
Wow.
Because they love, you know, early rock and roll. And
who would have thought my crazy little idea would be embraced like that? I really thought I'd have a hard time even talking them into letting me do it, if you want the truth.
Really?
I had started out when I interviewed Steve for that, it was for a magazine article for Vintage Rock Magazine.
Yeah.
And they cut about a third of it out, naturally. The part about the lounge bands went by the wayside, and I was kind of honked about that. So I thought, well, let's do a CD. And they went for it right away, which shocked the heck out of me. And then you can see I finished the notes in July, and it's already
here
in December.
Yeah.
So, but I had been working on those notes for 6 years.
Wow.
I'm curious. So Bill came up with the concept for the CD. He did the liner notes. He came up with the idea for all the tracks. How did Bear Family track down the good quality? Because there are pristine quality recordings here of some things that are just about impossible to find.
Me.
Thank you, Bill.
Yeah. I looked at, because the first version of it they had sent me, I didn't think was quite up to par, so I started looking for better copies on stuff. In some cases, I fell a little short, but in some, I didn't. You just have to take it from wherever you can find it. It's sort of like the days when they were pulling Tommy Johnson blues records from 1927 off old 78s. You know, at this point, you find them where you can.
Where did you find on the CD? At that point, he was called Clearwater, but it's Eddie Clearwater. I was looking around. I can't find that any place other than that it's not on YouTube. It is not to be had.
Well, I keep some of them secret. There was a CD that Eddie himself put out at some point, and it was on there. But I also have an album that came out over in Europe. And before that, I had an old 45. And all those had it in pretty clean sounds.
Wow.
So if you dig on that one, there's a couple. I'm not going to mention which titles, but I wasn't altogether happy with the way they sounded. It was the best I could come up with. But the ones like that Mark IV, Make With A Shake, I couldn't believe how clean that one was that I found it. Holy cow, this thing sounds like it's right off the master tape. And I have no idea where this company would have ever found this to have done that. So it was on the Cosmic label. Who knows who would even own that now?
We are talking with music journalist Bill Dahl, Chicagoan. His new project, Chicago Rocks, Windy City Rock and Roll Volume 1.
If you are a fan of vintage Chicago rock, Chicago artists from, what do you say, Bill, roughly 1959 to 1963.
Oh, we go back a little further. This 1955 for Penny Smith. I've got news for you.
Okay.
The interesting thing about that track is Bill Haley co-wrote it, and I don't think the Comets ever cut it. If they did, I should have never seen it. I have no idea on earth how it got to a label it was one of the northern suburbs, Cahill Records. No idea how that managed.
Wasn't Penny Smith, Johnny, you found that she was married to Jim Lounsbury at one point?
Yeah.
She had more names than John Lee Hooker in his prime.
Yes.
She was Penny Smith. She was Debbie Stevens. She was Penny in the Echoes. She was Debbie Dean at Motown. She was the first white female singer at Motown.
Really?
As Debbie Dean.
That's so interesting, because that's the one woman that makes it into the cut here. And so that was in 55?
Yeah.
And did it help her career that she was married to Jim Lounsbery, was a rock and roll icon in radio in Chicago?
She was on the Winter Dance Party tour opening for Buddy and the Bopper. That one that Jim Lounsbery, obviously, it was easy for that one, at least, up in Kenosha. And she was on that. There's some pictures. I think there's a picture in the booklet there of them all together with Frankie Sardo. And but she had recorded all the way back in 1950 for Aristocrat, which was Chess Records' predecessor, as Penny Smith.
Do we know why she kept changing her name?
I don't
know. Because it's really weird to go from Penny Smith to Debbie Dean to half a dozen different names.
And her Roulette single came out under the name of the Deltones, who you see in there also. They were a white doo-wop group from the West Side. The K's, you know, the streets with the K's, they were from out through there. Sammy Basile was their lead singer, and they've got the, Early Morning Rock, which is an interesting record because it took them like 2 days to record. It said 26 takes on that song alone.
Whoa. So let's 26 takes on that song. Mm-hmm. Tobin Matthews, you said he learned that song, that Buddy Holly song, that day, went into the studio and recorded it.
Well, they were already there in the studio. Probably was 10 minutes later, he just went out.
So he went from the bathroom into the studio and recorded it. So there's not a lot of, do we know multiple takes to get to that point?
I don't, that was on USA, but it was done at Chess. Lounsbery produced it.
Jim Lounsbery again.
He had his hands on in as many pies as did Dick Clark. But as I say in there, but he never got called in front of Congress, did he?
Interesting.
He had the TV show.
I didn't know that Lounsbery produced that session because some of the things that came out of that session, some great stuff. There was Slippin' and Slidin'.
Mm-hmm.
There was an instrumental, and I'm trying to think of the name of the instrumental. But
Moanin'.
It had Gene Daddy G. Barge playing sax on it.
It was called Moanin', I think.
Yeah, it's a killer track. And I've got some of the original old USA records. And that, one of the reasons we loved that group, they were the first group locally that had Fender basses. And that gave the group a real bottom end. And if you had a Fender, I mean, they were literally, it may have been as a result of when they went with USA, because all of a sudden they went from having these nondescript instruments to everybody had Fender guitars, Fender basses, Fender amplifiers. And I think it was, it may have been as a result of some of the people they were working with at USA that said, okay, we're going to try and really make this a thing.
Probably Paul Glass.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Bill. During this period, how off the top of your head, the number of record labels in Chicago?
Countless. It's
really?
And the more I look into it,
there's a book in that alone.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Matter of fact, I found one on you that I didn't even know existed. Alvin Records.
Alvin Records. Okay, I'll give you the rest of the story on Alvin Records. Alvin Records was a label that was owned by a guy. Oh, I'm trying to think of his name. It's on the record. Anyhow, when we were working at Popple's, we were told, okay, we're going to have you cut a record. This guy wrote some songs, and he'd like to have you guys cut the record. We went to a field house. They set up it was a reel-to-reel recorder. We didn't think this was going to be released. And we were all really surprised when 6 months later this thing comes out. It was just a demo session we did to say, okay, here's your songs. Fine, we'll record your songs so you have copies of this so you can have somebody record them.
Well, that was kind of an underhanded move then.
Yeah.
Because you were lied to.
Yeah.
You recorded and then the guy released it.
But the only cool thing about that is that was an example of how the group sounded at that sound at that time. No overdubs, no nothing. That was just... okay, play, we'll record.
Mm-hmm.
And a pretty decent little rock and roll record, I must say.
And Satan Is Her Name, there was no overdub on that either.
No, there was no. Satan Is Her Name was produced by David Carroll for Mercury Records. And I believe we recorded that at RCA Studios. But that was, again, no overdubbing. That's how the group sounded.
And David Carroll went on to...
Oh, David Carroll was Mercury's chief A&R guy, and he produced people like Oh, the Platters and Patti Page.
What did he have to do with the Smothers Brothers?
He discovered the Smothers Brothers.
Oh, okay. It's kind of impressive.
And he was a kind of a technically a one-hit wonder for Melody of Love?
Mm.
Yeah, an instrumental that the
Oh, David Carroll was.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
And later on, he produced your garage rock single, right?
Yes, he did.
Very nice.
After 43 years, I'm going, really? learning things.
Well, Satan is her name. And in fact, I still have, and I want to get it away from me and back to Bill, but I still have, there are four cuts from a session that David produced on me after he left Mercury. Two of them were released, and I have the dubs of the other ones that have never been released.
Wow.
Let's get on that.
In pretty pristine condition, too.
Very good.
Wayne Worley, tell me about him.
He was one of those guys. That's one of the tributaries of Chicago rock and roll, these guys that come up from the South looking for jobs, Hayden Thompson being the best known one, of course, Hank Mizell and the Jungle Rock, which is another killer one on here. And Wayne Worley came up here looking for work, and he made that record. I think it was in Ed Cody's basement out in what was it, Des Plaines or somewhere? He had a studio in his basement, and he cut that thing. And then it got picked up by Bobby Shad's label, Brent, in New York. But Wayne had kind of thrown in the towel after the thing. It didn't sell on, let me look here, because I don't want to get this
wasn't
wrong.
Wasn't it Eldridge? Eldridge?
Yeah, that was Ed Cody's own label. So Wayne sold his guitar and threw in the towel, and then they sold it to Bobby Shad and it started selling, and he came back up and bought another guitar and started gigging off of it. So
and then he was still Wayne Worley and the Worley Birds. Yeah.
And then he made another one for Elbridge called Hully Gully Twist, She's Quite a Dish, and that was another one. And the piano player got a proper billing on that. His name was Jesse Harvey, who sounds a lot like Jerry
Killer
Dayback,
piano
the
player.
Swoops. Yeah. So that was a killer all the way around. That record is one of my favorites. It's on there along with the Jungle Rock by Hank Mizell, who was playing the Napoleon Lounge. It had come out on a label called Echo, EKO.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't doing much.
Where was Napoleon Lounge?
Somewhere out on the west side. I've never come up with it. I got to hit the phone books or something to find these things out.
Well, in fact, if listeners know, they can fill us in at 312-981-7200. Mm-hmm. If we come to a blank spot, fill it in for us, because you can text us anytime throughout the show.
I have to tell you, I will never forget the first time I heard Redheaded Woman, because we'd gone to record in Ed Cody's studio, and he had just finished recording Wayne, and he was just putting it out, and he let us hear one of the first cuts of it.
Wow.
And we were blown away by it. And I believe I first heard it, I want to say it was on WIND.
Really? Huh?
At that point. Because at that point in Chicago rock, the only stations playing rock were WIND and WJJD. Which was only a daytimer at that, but that was the only source for rock and roll in Chicago. This was pre-LS and pre-CFL.
And CFL, yeah.
He based that on Sonny Burgess's Sun record of Redheaded Woman, of course, but he added that lyric in there about the bartender being a sot. Which is a strange word to use in a rock and roll record. I had to listen to it.
It's old school.
What's he saying?
Bo the Bartender.
Yeah. And there really was apparently a Bo the Bartender, and apparently he liked to
drink
have a
little.
A nip now and then. Yeah.
We should tell you all that 35 tracks, so we're like 79, 80 minutes of music on one CD, and the booklet that Bill has written gives you 36 pages, right?
Yeah.
Small print, there's a lot of information there, a whole lot of information.
Yeah, and great pictures, too.
Yeah, I love the pictures. That must have been fun, just kind of, and again, you took years putting this project together, but now it's going to steamroll. We're going to get volume 2 and 3.
Yeah, we could talk about Steve Schickel. We remember him as a WGN.
Yes.
But back in the 50s, he was writing a column for the Tribune about rock and roll and recording artists. And then he became a recording artist himself and did this Leave My Sideburns Be. But the oddest thing of all was, again, my friend Felix yesterday found two clippings of it. Do you know what he became after he was a columnist / rock and rolls? He was a hypnotist in 1959.
No.
There's a picture of him with a very stern look on his face, looking at somebody like this, looking down at them like he's trying to will them to be hypnotized. I got to use that photo in the next one. There's no doubt about that.
And then
that.
He transitioned to media.
Yeah, somewhere in the 60s. But there's a missing part in here, too, that I don't know where he was during the early to mid-60s. He eventually became WGN-TV Springfield correspondent for many years. Like when I was at Columbia College, he was, you know, a big deal on WGN television. Yeah. So, like him and Frank Rios and that whole crowd, you know, I remember seeing all those guys when Carl Grayson did the late night news.
Oh, yeah.
So, but back, who knew? I wonder, I always wondered if he Steve plugged his own records in his own column in the Tribune.
Because he was writing about music,
yeah,
sure.
It was on Mercury Records. I mean, this was big time, major label stuff.
We got to find some microfiche. That's where we would find stuff like that going back to the 50s.
Oh, that's what Felix is digging up for him. He comes over
God
with this
bless
big
him.
Pile of, here's another one. I'd be looking at my mouse just like, oh my God, look at this.
Wow.
Here's Tony Smith and the Aristocrats from in the mid-60s posing with Rocco Greco, the old organ player. These people all played at the Cairo.
And Rocco Greco, I was telling Johnny, it's weird. I'm looking at the all the track listing and things from my pastor coming back. I played drums behind Rocco Greco on a song he did called My Greatest Mistake that was on one of Donald DeLucia's record labels, probably Cha-Cha Records.
Wow.
And we recorded it at MBS. It was MBS Recording Studios, but MBS stood for Midwestern Broadcasting School, which is where I went to broadcasting school.
Uh-huh.
And one day Rocco was up there, and he had this thing that he wanted to record, but he didn't have a drummer. And I said, well, okay, you want me to do it? And they said, sure. So I did.
Wow. He had a bar out on the northwest side for many years on Belmont. East of Central. And my mom, after the Cairo burned down, the next place she worked was at Belmont and Central, the Miami Lounge. So
the Miami Lounge.
Yeah. And she moved up to the Black Knight at Montrose, or at Sunnyside and Central. And I snuck in there one time to see Dave Mitchell and the Thunderballs play when I was about 10.
Mm.
And they were a good R&B band, kind of lounge band.
Uh-huh.
And that was a whole, and the lounge bands are a very important part of this CD too, like Bill Scully and the Dynatones and Tony Smith and the Aristocrats. That was part of the rock and roll scene back then, too. You must have seen a fair amount of those cats.
Sure.
Well, we talked about the guy at Kalo, the restaurant on the
north
side.
Yeah, sure. As a matter of fact, there was a guy that Johnny and I used to see performing with his accordion at Kalo Restaurant over on Clark Street.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, the first time I saw this guy was on American Bandstand with Dick Clark.
That was so weird, sitting at Kalo, we're eating spaghetti, and you said, I think I know who that is.
Yeah.
All these years later.
Wow.
Tony Bellis is the singer, and he wrote the song, too. And didn't he say that that was based on his own experience?
Yes, he said he was going with a young girl right then, and I didn't go any further into it when I interviewed him about that.
And people would tease him about the fact she was so young.
Yeah.
And if you can imagine, back in the day, a rock and roll accordion player. And you only hear his accordion a little bit in the back of the
song.
But
it's there.
Mm-hmm. But it was a legitimate hit record. He made American Bandstand. And when Johnny and I first started dating, he was a regular presence.
Yeah, the lounge performer.
At Kalo Restaurant on Clark Street.
Mm-hmm.
And at a bar next door to it, too, it had a blue front. And I remember being on the bus one day and looking at it. I said, Tony Bellis is playing at that little bitty bar? What the heck? But I tracked him down and I found him. And he's a really good interview. And he told me about growing up slightly downstate. I forget what
Moments.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And those guys with him, the Light Brothers, are on guitar and bass. But he found it was a Latino vocal group doing the harmony. He was playing the Preview Lounge, which was next to the United Artists Theater. I just walked by it tonight. I took a walk around the North Loop before I got here. I was kind of trying to get in touch with the whole deal, you know. And it's not there anymore, needless to say, a theater or any of it. But they were playing there, and he just told them that day, that night, you want to come next day? Same thing. Want to come do harmony the next day? So that's how you hear those harmonies on there. And just from hearing it on the headphones, it reminds me RCA obviously had at least 3-track stereo at that point because it was in stereo.
Tony Bellis. And you said he just passed away last year.
I believe it was last year,
in his 90s.
Yeah.
And when you interviewed him, he talked about the fact that everybody's playing guitar, but he stuck with the accordion, and it worked for him.
It did. That was done here in Chicago, obviously, at RCA Studios. But his later NRC stuff, they had him just come down to Atlanta and do it over backing tracks made by couple guys named Joe South and Ray Stevens. So there you go.
Really?
In Atlanta. Yeah, they were house guys for NRC at that point. So
wow. Okay, before we run out of time, can we sneak in Hayden Thompson? One of the nicest human beings in the world. Indeed. Still a true Southern gentleman. Hayden, who's been on our show many times, was a very successful limo driver in the northern suburbs, but he would go to Europe. In fact, when I was decorating our Christmas tree, I have a segment of the tree with ornaments that Hayden brought back from Denmark and from all over the Netherlands and Germany and a huge rock star over in Europe. And then he would come back here and get behind the wheel of his limo and drive for a living. What a great story. And he was so popular. Didn't he start out at Sun Studios?
Mm-hmm. Jerry Lee Lewis played piano on his first record.
Yep.
And Hayden's still alive. Just talked to him a couple of months ago. You've talked to him?
Yes, I have, but not lately. I saw him a couple of times at that Irish American Fest they'd have every year out on the Northwest Side. Those are the last times I saw him perform, and he was still great. It was wonderful to still see him. But I saw him down in New Orleans one time at the Ponderosa Stomp.
Oh, yeah.
See him all over the place.
Yeah.
One of my favorite guys.
Him and his wife, Georgia, we have a history because I'm from Tennessee. And my dad ran a chain of movie theaters. And in 54 and 55, Hayden would come to those theaters that my dad was running to perform. And so my dad was the brown-eyed, handsome man, you know. He would laugh and he goes, I know your family. Now, whether or not he really did remember him, he remembered that circuit. It was a very successful circuit, the movie theater circuit.
Is that when he was carrying around the copy of Rock Around the Clock with him and they would play on top of the refreshment stand and then they would run the movie?
Yeah.
Yeah. He told me about that, yes.
He's still got it. He's still got the voice. He still goes back in the studio. I think the last time we had him on the show, Steve, didn't he have a new piece of music he'd released?
He did, yeah.
And I just want good things to happen for him.
And in fact, he had just finished recording over in Sweden, I believe it was.
Yes, they loved him. He was in really good hands with this guy over in Sweden that said, you know, you deserve to be treated right, you know.
He got fed up with Sun because they weren't putting the stuff out fast enough, so he
moved
up here.
Because that was during the Elvis period.
Yeah. So he got a nice gig in Highwood 5 or 6 nights a week, and he found the guitar player, Travis Westmoreland, and made those demos. I think that was 59 or 60 that was done at Hall Studios. Did you ever?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I've recorded at Hall Studios, with Stu Black.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Probably a third of the stuff on here was done at Hall Studios. It's amazing how active they were.
Let's go to another one of our friends,
okay.
Clearwater. Yeah. Eddie played guitar upside down and backwards. Literally, if you imagine a regular guitar, flip it over, he didn't change the strings or anything, so he was playing guitar the way you shouldn't be able to play guitar, and he did a great job of it.
Actually, it's easier in some ways because you can bend down instead of up on your high strings, and that's why Otis Rush, who did the same thing, had those massive guitar bends, is because they had that they could pull like 3 or 4 frets that way. Mm-hmm. Albert King was another one, same deal, played upside down, and you hear those wow, sounds like a steel guitar when he hits it because he's bending so hard. I can't do that coming up from underneath like that.
But where did Eddie record that?
I'd have to go back and check. I know he did it with Mando and the Chili Peppers, who were a Latin group.
Great name.
Who came through here.
And Mando and the Chili Peppers.
He was big. I guess Mando wrote those lyrics originally, or one of the guys in the band. In any event, though, I see where Eddie ended up with the credit. It was on Jump Jackson's LaSalle label. Jump was a local drummer, went back to the 40s, and kind of a Jump Blues kind of guy. And that was his label, little label LaSalle. And he was managing. He was the guy that called him Clearwater. It was supposed to be like Muddy Waters, Clearwaters.
Oh, duh.
Even though they don't sound anything alike.
Yeah.
Might have well called him Barry for all better.
But I'm so glad you included Eddie Clearwater and Hayden in particular, because I know them and they're such great guys.
Eddie was one of my guys. One time I went up to his house up there in Skokie and he let me play all his guitars. It's a wireless thing. He keeps bringing them out. And I thought, these things play like butter. I never played guitars like these in my life. They're just set up perfectly.
Wow.
Wow.
And of course, since they were left hand, I mean, he flipped them so I could play them just fine.
Yeah. But when he was in studio with us, again, he was a little nervous.
Really?
You know?
And that was it. He just had a new album out, and that's why we had him in the studio. And somewhere we have a tape of a mini disc or something of Eddie and I jammed together.
And your Christmas present that year was a blown up picture of the two of you with your red Gibson guitar sitting side by side.
Because he had this red Gibson guitar that he was playing upside down, and then I had my red Gibson playing
upside
down.
And our producer snapped a picture of the two of you and then blew it up for you as a Christmas present that year.
It broke my heart once I was interviewing him, and he's talking about having played a bar at Sheridan and Leland that I had once stood out in front of when I was 10 waiting for Jerry Lee Lewis's autograph, never saw him. It was like the place was closed. I thought the gig was off, right? So he says, no, man, I opened for him that night. I said, oh, my. And he said, and they taped it. And when we jammed at the end, I was like, but he lost the tape.
Oh my gosh. Wait, you were 10 standing outside of a bar?
Okay, now
with my mom.
What year would that have been?
66 or 7.
Okay, and do you recall what the bar was?
It was like the Sheridan Lounge or something. It had a generic name.
We had some cool places in Chicago, the more we talk.
Yeah. Everywhere. There was a bar on every corner with live entertainment.
Because I remember coming up to the north side to see Jerry Lee at a bar, and it was just...
Probably that little kid outside was Bill.
It was just after he had signed with Smash Records.
That might have been the Club Laurel. Was it?
Yes, it was Club Laurel.
North of Foster. It became many things. It became Bananas on Broadway, Broadway
That's
Jacks.
Right. Yes.
I might have even played there once at Broadway Jacks right at the end in a band that nobody would remember in a billion years.
Okay.
You can get that cut. Mm-hmm. One of many on this new CD, Chicago Rocks, Windy City Rock and Roll, Volume 1. It's on the Bear Family label, and the guy who put together the... big fat, I'm holding it in my hand.
Wonderful liner notes.
There are essays on every single person that you have featured in the CD, which is really amazing.
If you're a kind of a music historian, if you want to know what Chicago was doing pre New Colony 6, pre Cryin' Shames, pre
Buckingham's, Shadows
this
of Night.
Was a really serious music scene in Chicago with, as you've heard, some silly stuff, but some really cool vintage rock and roll too.
And it's the only part of it that wasn't documented, you know, as much as you possibly could. Blues, jazz, soul, doo-wop. Books have been written about this. Piles and piles of books have been written about those things, and rightfully so. Heck, I've written some about it myself, but nobody ever wrote about this stuff. Mm-hmm. And that always kind of bothered me. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Why don't these guys get any juice and effect? So I decided something needed to be done about it. And that's why I wrote that little article for Vintage Rock Magazine. And I had to work pretty hard to get that magazine to do it. Mm-hmm. And then they chopped out about a third of it. All my lounge band part was knocked out, and that really hurt because that was the most personal to me, the Tony Smith and the Bill Scully when I was 4.
Sure.
I wanted to have that in there. My mom, I mean, it was, you know, tied in with that, my late mom and everything. And so I thought, I got to do better somewhere else. And that's where I thought, well, I can get Bear Family to go for this.
Well, we mentioned the New Colony 6. Mm-hmm. You think of New Colony 6, you think of our friend Ronnie Rice. And let's go for some really vintage Roddy Rice.
This is 1961, Evanston High School.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And had he recorded this before meeting Biondi, Dick Biondi, or?
It was on that same label, that IRC, so he had gone to meet Dick Biondi at his house. I guess he
dragged him down.
Mm-hmm. He just knocked on his door.
And had a tape.
Yeah. And so that led to this recording session. And the writer is credited as one Gene Carone, which Don Carone was the producer. So I assume it's an alias for him.
Because Ronnie, of course, he's talked for years about his love for Dick Biondi because he says, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Dick Biondi. Mm-hmm. Because he was solo, and then he joined the New Colony 6, which was already established.
Right.
And then he left them to go solo again. And I remember in high school going to see Ronnie at Lawrence of Oregano. Yeah. Yes, over on Diversey.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And he was performing there, and we all were like, wait a minute, you know, he had hit records. And
And what was the place up in Evanston that he used to perform at, too?
Oh, I don't know.
Off of Sheridan Road?
But he's still performing.
Yeah.
He says, I don't have to work as much as I used to, but, you know, gigs come along, and he's a human jukebox. Mm-hmm. He's an. Have you seen him in recent years performing?
Believe once, yes.
Oh, my gosh.
He still sounds great.
He will do 40 or 50 songs.
Yeah.
No, he doesn't do the whole version because his ADD kicks in, and he does some.
In a weird way, Ronnie is kind of like a solo Sleepy LaBeef. And for those of you who know rockabilly, Sleepy LaBeef, I will never forget when we first met him. We were emceeing a Rockabilly Hall of Fame Foundation concert at the Ryman Auditorium. And Sleepy comes out with his band, and he starts singing. And about a half hour later, he finishes singing, and he's gone through about 97 songs.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's kind of Ronnie, only Ronnie just does it with one guitar. And
Sleepy would leave his band in the dust a lot of the time, change into some other key, hit a different
tempo,
and boom.
Honestly, at that concert, he almost left the audience in the dust because he was the last act of 20 acts, right?
Yeah.
And everybody went, okay, we're ready to go home.
Oh, but that was a great night.
It was.
That's the first time we met Ronnie Dawson,
mm-hmm.
who was just extraordinary.
Yeah, that was a big night. I've got to answer a couple of the texts.
Before we get carried away.
Yes.
People have been asking, where can they get it?
I love
what
this text.
How do they get it?
Okay, I'm sold. Where can I get it? another text. I get a lot of CDs. When will this one become available? So once again, it is available now, right?
I have seen it. I bought a copy myself before the ones from the label come my way at Dusty Groove, which is a wonderful record store down there on Ashland, south of Division. So I saw it and I couldn't resist. But
you didn't know that apparently it's showing up on the Best Buy and Walmart sites,
too. No, I did not know that at all. That's wonderful.
Yeah, it is great.
But you mentioned oldies.com, right?
That's, oldies.com was a really great price at $16.
That's really
Amazon
great
was $24.
And you can get it on bearfamily.com, too.
For $21.
Yeah.
And do you recall what you paid at Dusty Groove?
It was $17.99.
That's a good price, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So answering the question of where do you get it, but you need to know it's Chicago Rocks Windy City Rock and Roll Volume 1. And our guest Bill Dahl did this big fat booklet that's inside that gives you the history of these people that performed. And can I take you back to Raoul Donner? Because I just looked at his bio. He was born in 43. He died on the day we were born. The day we were born.
Excuse me?
The day we were married. Hello. I was thinking he was born in 43. He passed away the very day that we got married.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. I thought he'd been around a lot longer than the 80s.
He was really young when he made his first record. He was 16.
Yeah.
And he'd already played everywhere from the Apollo Theater at Sammy Davis Jr.'s invitation to the Chez Paris here, which that building's still here, even if the Chez Paris isn't, just north of here, which was a big, fancy nightclub, you know.
Yeah.
And I think there were certain people after him, so to speak, that probably wanted him to sign the old long-term contract. So he fled to Memphis and then Florida. And that's where he made his first records, Memphis for the label Scotty Records, which was an Atlanta label. And then he actually had Bill Black on bass on that one, on his first record. And then he went
Elvis's guy.
Yeah, and then he went to Florida and recorded his big hits in Miami.
Was it a curse that he sounded so much like Elvis?
Well, the gentleman I interviewed for this was his drummer, Daniel Pawlak Jr., and he said he used to kid him and say, "You sound too much like Elvis," and Raoul would say, "Well, that's just how I sound."
So he wasn't trying to sound, that was just him, and with the southern accent and everything, it just worked.
Even though he was from here, of course, he went to Taft High School.
Did he really? Mm-hmm. All my life, I thought he was from the South.
No. He was born and bred on the Northwest side.
Wow. Yep.
And I was telling Bill off the air that last time I saw Raoul Donner was probably at the Sabre Room on the South Side. When I interviewed him for an album that he sang and narrated called I've Been Away for a While, and it was a double album set where it was kind of an Elvis Presley talking about, I've been away for a while, but here's blah, 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 blah. And he recorded it with Elvis's original band members, Scotty Moore, DJ Fontana, the Jordanaires. And
wow.
it was a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
So since he had Bill Black on his first record, he had the whole band over the course of his lifetime.
Yeah.
Well, and as you point out in the liner notes, Ral was one of a number of performers that had some serious consequences as a result of the guy who was originally the owner of Roulette Records, who also was involved with Gone Records, which was the company that did Ral's first albums.
Morris Levy. Mm-hmm. I guess we could say the infamous Morris Levy and not be litigious, because he was. He would have been in jail had he not died before he had to serve his sentence.
Well, and for people who heard the interview we did many years ago with Tommy James.
Right.
Really talks all about Morris Levy and the
mob. His book, he spelled it out.
In fact, wasn't the book Me, the Music, and the Mob like that?
Right. Yeah.
Yes, Morris was apparently connected. But he was a tough guy, but he put out great records. We can't, that's always what you got to go back to. There's always a good side to somebody. And in this case, he put out a lot of great records.
Well, there's another guy that worked behind the scenes that's featured here, Carl Bonifetti.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, Carl,
the Screaming Wild Man.
I only know that name through the Buckinghams.
Yeah.
Because,
He was responsible for the Buckinghams' first hit.
Mm-hmm.
But he performed, and so you've got a song by him.
Werewolf.
Werewolf.
It's a good one.
What was the story behind that?
He was he was making records back then, and he was promoting dances. That was his other. He saw Lounsbury.
Oh, that's right. He saw Jim Lounsbury, and he knew, there's nobody else doing this.
And he had one of those little vans tricked out with a record player, and a speakers on the top. So he would drive up to high schools and start playing records, and people would have kind of like a hop right then and there.
So it would be like a pop-up hop.
Mm-hmm.
I want to take you in a completely different direction just for a second.
Sure.
How do you explain, or was it just the nature of the beast, that there is only one female on this album? And before you give an answer, I will say, when I got into radio in 1966, one of the edicts at the radio station, WJOB in Hammond, that I was working at, is you will not play more than one female vocal an hour. The audience can't stand it.
Wow.
Well, in 77, I was told you can't play them back to back.
I don't know. In this case, there just weren't very many making rock and roll in Chicago in that period.
They were singing backup, because you got a lot of angels harmonizing and singing in the back.
I found one for volume two besides Debbie Dean here. Named Betty Lane.
Did you know Betty Lane, Steve?
No, I did not.
She only had one single. It was on Chess, no less.
Huh.
But by and large, there weren't many. Man, I tried, and I'm still trying. I'm still looking for more, but very few out there that I've been able to find.
There were sort of pop female artists.
Yeah.
And you had your Patti Pages, and certainly Les Paul and Mary Ford.
Right.
But you didn't have any female rock artists that were really doing anything at that time.
Like Betty Johnson, who was on Chicago's own Bally Records. Pops, just straight pop. Can't use that on here because she ain't rocking. So. Mm-hmm. Couldn't do that. And
she ain't rocking, so there.
No, she's out. So I really wanted this whole thing to rock all the time.
Yeah.
You know? Like this Make with the Shake by the Mark IV. That rocks like crazy. That was what I was looking for. Just constant boom, 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 one right after the other. Because that's kind of what Bear Family's known for. They don't really go for the slow stuff. This Rock a Ballad series I do some of the notes for, that is more slow stuff. But that's the rarity there. All those rockabilly things they do, they're just boom, 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 one right after the other. And I kind of wanted to show, we can do that here too.
Yeah, we did. Yep. And we're going to document it. And you did beautifully. Congratulations.
Thank you
again
much.
For people who want to get a copy of the CD. And it belongs in your collection. There's a lot of great stuff. There's stuff that you're going to say, oh, that's ridiculous. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was a lot of stuff that happened in the early rock and roll days. People saying, okay, we're going to put on a rock and roll record.
Or, 17-year-old Ronnie Rice getting an opportunity to go to a studio. Right. And then his life was changed forever.
household name in Chicago now,
sure.
Right? That's a good example.
Yes.
But again, you did such a great job with the research that you put into this, and it comes through that you have an appreciation and a passion for the music.
And we will have a link to it on our – well, we already have some links to it, but we'll add more on our mm-hmm. Facebook page and on our blog. But it's called Chicago Rocks, Windy City Rock and Roll, Volume 1. Which means there has to be a volume 2. And a volume
You're not going to wait 6 years for volume 2, are you?
No, I don't want to lose the thread. I'm already set and laying it out.
So. Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good.
If people want to get in touch with you, through Facebook?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Just do a search for Bill Dahl, D-A-H-L.
I've got two different, I've got a business account as well as a personal. So the business one is everybody can get hold of me there.
Okay, good deal. And you'll hear Bill back with us in the future. So thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Thank you very much for
having
me. It's
been such a pleasure. Bill Dahl, the guy behind Chicago Rocks, Windy City Rock and Roll, Volume 1.
We've been so busy tonight, we didn't get to talk about New Year's Eve resolutions.
No.
Or
who does resolutions?
Well,
I hate resolutions. Well, nothing but pressure. Superstitions, I'm all about those.
Traditions.
AKA superstitions, because you got to have your greens, whether it's turnip, collard, mustard, or you northerners can have spinach. You need greens on New Year's Day because that symbolizes money.
Okay.
You don't eat chicken on New Year's Day. Why, Steve?
Because the chicken, ruts backwards or something?
Scratches backwards.
Okay.
You got to eat pork because the pig roots forward into the new year.
Okay.
These are...
So green pork, that's what you're saying?
No. Greens and pork.
Okay.
And some people actually put a coin in the pot of mm-hmm. the greens. You know what? You know where those dimes and pennies have been. I ain't putting that in my food.
No.
I'll give you money. But then you back up to New Year's Eve and the superstitions with New Year's Eve. You open your back door, you open your front door, so the new year can come in the front door and the old year can go out the back door.
Right.
And you put money on your windowsill and you hope that mm-hmm. it's taken away by the bad spirits that were going to come into your house. They'll just take your money and go to the next house.
And thank you to some of the people on our Facebook page who said, boy, we remember you're doing the New Year's mm-hmm. Eve shows. Yeah, been there, done that.
25 of them.
And if a New Year's Eve happens on a Saturday night, we may do it again at some point. But
bite your tongue.
But for right now, we're very happy to...
The stress of coming downtown on New Year's Eve. I look back on that and I say, why did we say every year, sure, we'll do that?
Because we would be on the air from roughly
10 o'clock.
11 o'clock.
Well, we'd get here.
But we'd get here. We would be on the air from just before 11 o'clock because we would do the New York countdown.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'd be on till 5 in the morning. And we would do countdowns from each different time zone. And we would have celebrities joining in after they finished a New Year's Eve gig or something. And we checked in with every place from Hawaii to Barrow, Alaska to...
I just flashed back on one of my favorite New Year's Eves on the air.
Hmm.
And it was not Y2K. That was a nightmare. That 1999 into 2000.
That was a little scary.
We thought the world was going to end. So we're trying to be charming and delightful on the radio when around us are all of these official people who are prepared to kick into whatever mode when the world starts crumbling around us. That was really unnerving.
And we still have our Y2K
fanny pack.
Fanny packs.
The Tribune gave us a fanny pack. We were owned by the Tribune at that time.
Yep.
They gave us a fanny pack, and in the fanny pack was a 6-ounce bottle of water,
uh-huh.
a pack of M&Ms, and a glow stick.
Yeah.
So if hell breaks loose, you're ready for it. And then they brought in rollaway beds.
Wasn't there some sort of bar, like an energy bar or something?
A granola bar.
Yeah.
Yes. And then they had rollaway beds, remember, in case we were going to be staying here for days.
And they had engineers... stationed at WGN Radio's transmitter.
So
just in case there was some...
there were people that we never saw because they were daytime people and they were here at night. So when the world came to an end, it was terrifying. And then we had to be all jubilant and it's New Year's Eve and and of course on New Year's Eve, remember, no commercials because all of the sponsors have spent their money for Christmas. Yeah. So there's no commercial time and you're like, oh.
Which meant that we didn't have any time for a break or anything.
Or to cry or to scream. But my favorite New Year's Eve night, it came back to me just as you were talking a few minutes ago. It was the first year that we were connected via internet to our audience. Mm-hmm. And we said, if you want to send us a New Year's greeting to someone, we'll read it to that someone on the air.
And we had people who were sending us emails, and they had people who were listening in Chicago, but they were stationed somewhere
in Germany.
In Germany or
we
wherever.
Had, the Gulf War.
Yeah.
It's just, when I think about that, and I get goosebumps because there were those instances where we would say, well, this one is for Jim, and he says, blah, 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 blah.
Didn't we have a proposal?
Yes.
Yes.
And it happened right there in black and white in front of us via text. It was so exciting, and it was legit. And for whatever reason, I think we were in the bowels of the building. We weren't in the Showcase studio because some of the really fun nights were doing the New Year's Eve show from the Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue. Where
we had those darn accordions playing Led Zeppelin, 12 accordion players playing Led Zeppelin.
And we
were all, love.
We were all warm and cozy, and it was like 12 outside, and people outside literally... Michigan Avenue is closed, and it's just a mass of humanity as far as you can see. And they're standing outside, and occasionally somebody would walk up to the window, please, may I come in and warm up? I'm freezing. Sorry, can't do that. We're in there sweating.
Because legally, we couldn't.
We couldn't. We could, as soon as we opened the doors, there were thousands of people out there. Or somebody would say, can't I just come in to use the bathroom? Nope. Can't do that.
And I guess part of it really was legal insurance stuff, too.
Yeah.
If something happened to whatever.
Anyway, those were the days. 25 of those we did.
Yep.
And Steve says if New Year's Eve falls on a Saturday, Sunday night again, maybe.
Well.
No.
When is the next time that New Year's Eve falls on a Saturday? Julian, can you?
We're coming up on our third anniversary.
I looked a few years ahead and nothing yet.
Good.
Okay, so we're good.
Until our 2030s, most likely.
Okay.
But this year, Andrea Darlis, formerly from WGN News, she's going to be doing a special...
On Channel 9.
On Channel 9.
There's a lot... I think there may be more live local TV this year than there has been in many years. I know Channel 2 is doing something. Channel 7 always does their...
Cheryl's going to dance.
Cheryl's going to dance. And with Ryan Seacrest, with Dick Clark's New Year's Rockin' Eve. Mm-hmm. And Chance the Rapper is going to be doing a local New Year's Eve thing on Channel 7. And then Channel 9, of course, with Andrea. And they're going to be...
on Navy Pier.
Simulcasting some of the stuff from Navy Pier. So there's lots of options. And honestly, this New Year's Eve, we're probably going to be home watching some of that stuff because we don't choose to. Julian, what are you doing New Year's Eve?
That's a great question. Probably getting drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's not usually my thing, but it's been a year. It's been a year.
Okay.
Yeah. Now that you mention
it's been a year since you've had a drink. So
yes.
Instead of screaming, I think I'll just get drunk too. How's that?
Oh, and I looked ahead. If you guys have a show in 2033, that'll be your next New Year's Eve show.
Lord. Okay. All right.
Oh, no.
If we're doing, let's see.
That's only 8 years from now, Steve.
Okay.
You'll still be clicking. You'll be like, yeah, I'm just 90. Come on.
But, because I'm going for 100.
Yeah, and 90's the new 70, so.
Yeah, works for me. Do we need to do a last call? Oh, speaking of last call.
What? Yee.
We should mention, next week, we will be starting our third year in this here radio place. Our third year with our show, version 2.0.
Right.
And among the things that will be happening, Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide, will be joining us. We will get a showbiz update.
from Gino Salamone, and you've heard our closing song by Red Peters, and we've said for years we got to get the boy on the show. Next week, Red Peters, he of closing song fame, will be joining us. So we will be kicking off our third year with Red Peters.
Yes. The man who we've said for 3 years, I bet he wonders why he has so much activity on his site for this one particular song. Because as we always say, if you ever hear the whole song being played, that means we ain't coming back.
Yep.
And if you play it yourself at
you
home,
you'll understand.
Yes, you'll know why.
You go to YouTube and look up Red Peters, the closing song.
Yes.
But we got some lines open if you would like to be our last call for the year. 312-981-7200. And as long as you haven't won anything from this here radio place in the past 2 months or 60 days, whichever comes first, you could win some goodies.
Yes. So. In fact, we'll even kick in, since it's the 25th anniversary of our CD, our Life After Dark CD.
Okay.
We will kick in one of those, too.
But I'm going to say tonight, you have to have something pithy to say.
Oh.
Since it's our last call of the year.
You could talk about the Bears, because Gabe is off ill tonight.
Yeah.
He didn't get to join us to
Gabe
do a little
better.
Sports between the sheets.
And we haven't had a chance to say boo to Sylvia. Boo, Sylvia.
So, and I think she probably got noticed that she was going to be staying up all night late in the day, because I heard from Gabe. He said, I thought I could come in, but I have no voice.
Sylvia, are you saying boo?
I am saying boo. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Sylvia. What are you doing on New Year's Eve?
You know, I will be here for the earlier part of the day, because
good.
The news happens always, right? Even on New Year's Eve.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't decided how I will spend my New Year's evening, though.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still trying to figure that part out.
Okay. Well,
yeah, if you have suggestions, let me
know.
You can
call us.
You know,
yeah. Call us.
Okay.
We'll celebrate.
Okay. Yeah, I may stay at home and...
You know what? Stay home.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's supposed to be...
One of the things we said as we were driving in tonight, particularly when we ran into all the traffic, oh boy, are we glad we don't have to fight traffic on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
And parking.
Oof. You know what? Because I'm leaving here earlier, I think maybe like 6 p.m. New Year's Eve, I thought the same thing. Like, woo, I just made it.
Mm-hmm. And Sylvia, both Johnny and I, in different pre-radio lives, had to deal with New Year's Eve traffic. I had to deal with it as I'd be wrapping up a gig at a lounge and driving home with the drunks about 3 or 4 in the morning. And Johnny had to do the same thing
as a waitress.
Yeah, I mean, it hadn't been bad like the past few years, because Chicago had not hosted a downtown fireworks display. Mm.
But this year,
yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah, and right down here too.
I got to tell you though, if you're already here, you might want to stick around for that fireworks show, because when you see it on the river from our vantage point, it is...
With the fireworks coming up at you. You're always looking up at fireworks going far up in the sky, but this time you're looking down at the fireworks coming up toward you. It is so cool, Sylvia.
It really is. If I had a parking place and I was already down here, I would stick around just for that, having experienced it once, because it was so breathtaking. We just stood here and said... Wait, nobody told us that we were going to be looking down on the fireworks, and they're all up and down the Chicago River. So,
you know, maybe I...
The more we talk, we'll talk her into it.
So last year, and I don't know if people know this, I anchored us in, the beginning of this year, January 1st, 2020.
Mm-hmm.
I anchored us into the new year.
Mm-hmm.
And as I did that, even though there was no official city fireworks display or New Year's Eve celebration, Navy Pier did have fireworks going off behind me as I'm anchoring us into the new year, and it was gorgeous. So I can completely co-sign to what you're saying. If you're here and you want to see
here,
a show,
yes, and you have a lunch with you so you can have a bite to eat after midnight. Yes.
Yeah, I'd highly recommend.
Well, Sylvia will be keeping you company throughout the night.
So we're going to kick off our 2026 broadcast schedule.
Our 3-year anniversary
of version 2.0 of our show.
Too many numbers. I'm not mapping this late at night. Okay, speaking of numbers, who's going to choose the number for our last caller? Julian.
Yeah, Julian.
It's your turn, Julian. You get to choose.
For the last call for the year.
For the year.
Feel no pressure.
Okay, well, since I've been with you guys for 2 years, 2+ years, I'll say caller number two. Let's go to Lee over in Chicago Heights.
Oh, all right.
Hi, Lee.
Hi. Oh, I'm so tickled to talk to you guys. I go back a long time. I remember when Johnny did the traffic for Bob Collins.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Oh, my gosh.
So, I've been listening a long time. But you know what I have to tell you, Johnny? You made us a great supper one night because you posted that recipe on your blog about what you did with your leftover pork loin.
Yes. And you did it?
I just cooked one that night and had half of it left over.
Oh.
And I realized I had everything in the house for it, and I made it. It's delicious.
Oh, man. We're so hungry right now. Do you know that we ate at 11 o'clock on Saturday morning? And we are famished.
So we've been thinking about what are we going to do. We think it's going to be a hamburger.
But if a pork loin were to walk in the house, I'd be jumping all over that.
Yeah.
Are you going to be watching?
I have to tell you a funny story.
Go ahead.
My mom was also a great fan of you guys.
Oh, that's nice.
For a period of time, I worked second shift. Mm-hmm. But I put you on the radio on my way home in the car. And then listen to you. And then the next morning, Mom would always bring up, did you hear Steve and Johnny last night? Did you hear Steve and Johnny last night? And one day she said to me, did you hear Patrick last night? And I said, yes. And she said, I think I should get a computer. Well, a chill ran down my spine.
Wow.
All I could think about was all the calls I was getting about how to work the VCR.
Yes. So did she get one?
Oh, I discouraged it.
Oh, bless her heart.
She was a great big fan.
Oh, that's very sweet.
She used to say to me, Steve, I kind of know the whole neighborhood where you grew up because my family was from Irondale.
Okay,
my grandfather worked at the mills.
Okay, at Southworks?
No, at Wisconsin Steel.
Oh, all right. Okay.
Yeah. Hmm.
So when you mention places like Isle of Capri and what's the name of that place in Harvey? The Brown something? Halstead?
There was a place, it was called the Brown Derby.
Yes.
Oh, I remember being a Northsider. I knew that one.
In fact, that's the first place that I met the Dells. I wound up backing the Dells when they were playing at the Brown Derby. That was right after they had the first version of Oh, What a Night.
Hmm.
And that would have been...
Oh, really?
Yeah, this would have been late 50-ish, like 59-ish, something like that.
Well, Lee, were you born on the South Side?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you were.
We lived in South Shore for a while. I went to Bradwell.
Oh, good grief. Well, I went to St. Bride's, and we used to, we were always told, you don't want to date those Bradwell girls. Because they didn't want the Catholic school boys dating the public school girls.
No. So, yeah, we lived in South Shore for a while, and then we moved to Roseland.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's where I finished high school and everything there. But, yeah, so I've been listening to you folks for a long time, and I really like your blog, and I really like listening to you.
Oh, thank you so much.
Late every Saturday night. But, and let me tell you something, Steve, 90s not bad.
Well,
judging
by your voice, I'm very pleased.
Well, hang on for just a second. We are going to get some info, and we're going to send you some goodies from our prize list, like an official WGN Radio T-shirt. And, of course, if you've been listening this many years, you deserve one of those T-shirts. So, Lee, thanks a million, and Happy New Year.
And we'll send you one of our Life After Dark CDs,
yes,
too.
Absolutely.
Is this a wrap for 2025?
Yeah.
Julian, this is a wrap for 2025.
It hasn't been the easiest year, but... Yeah. We're here to look back on it. So,
and I got to spend it with you guys.
Well, thank you, Julian. Oh. Thanks a million.
And thanks to Adam and to Ron and to Sylvia and to you guys for hanging out with us.
And Gabe, feel better because you're probably awake listening too.
And have a safe, happy new year, and we will talk to you next year.